welcome everyone to another episode of For the Love of Cinema. My name is Grayson Maxwell, and joining me...
Hey everyone, it's me, Nick Morris.
Sound like you forgot your name there for 1 second, Nick.
I think I did. I had a little bit of amnesia right there.
What's going on this week? You sound a little tired, man.
Dude, I'm just up late at night, you know, doing this and that.
What, are you out fighting crime? What are you doing?
No one's ever asked me that. Actually, yeah, I am.
Wouldn't that be cool if, like, you just found out one of your friends is, like, a crime fighter and he's responsible for putting away, like, tons of bad people? Wouldn't that be awesome?
Seeing some vigilante on the news. Hey, what are you doing? What are you doing so late at night? I'm fighting crime, man.
Step up. Do your part, man. It's like, how can they ever figure out? It would take me all of 5 seconds to figure out my one of my good friends was fighting crime, and he was the Batman or the Spider-Man.
Yeah.
It would take me all of 3 seconds to figure that out. But you know, then
call him out real quick.
Yeah, ruin the rest of the movie for everybody. Just call him out. All right, we have a good show today. We have lots of trailers to talk about. We have 4 trailers this week instead of just 3. We have Kristen Stewart news. Where has she been? We're going to tell you. Eddie Murphy might be coming back. He's been gone for quite some time and kind of struggling. But we're going to get into all of that. But first, as always, box office wrap-up is always fun. To no surprise at all, this week number 1, last week was number 2. It climbed back up in the first spot. Boy, this movie is just making all kinds of money. There's all kinds of articles about it shattering more records. $35 million budget. Nick, you want to take a guess at where it's at right now?
Oh, man. Where was it at last week?
You're like 0-3, man, with guessing. You're like 0-4, 0-3 with guessing this.
Oh, man. Okay. I'm going to go upwards of... Oh, man, this is so crazy. I want to say last week was, like,
600. No, it wasn't. I think last week was, like, just below 500.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, let's go with a 700 million.
No, overshot. 553. That's still very respectable for a movie of, like that, a horror movie. Andre Muschietti, good for you for crafting a wonderful remake. Or I think update with the recent, I've been looking at Jumanji recently. I have friends that I keep contact with back home, and we've been talking about Jumanji and how one of them is furious that there's this new Jumanji movie exists. And I don't seem to mind that much.
It kind of takes a different preference on the whole Jumanji.
Well, in one of the trailers, it's interesting because it brings up the game, and you see the board game, and then it goes into, like, talking about how it's a game, like it's a video game, like it's almost self-reliant that it's an updated. It's like the movie's telling you that it's updated and not a remake.
Yeah,
but I mean, it's not. I don't think it's a remake anyway. But it's, I think it's going to be an update. But I mean, as technology goes different places, you got to kind of factor in for that. That's one of the reasons, actually, why we talked about how the Ring movie that came out recently, within the past couple of months, did not do so well, is because it didn't update from...
Technologically?
Yeah, like, the original was about the VCR and the videotape in 2002, and this one was still about... It kind of moved into this internet file, but it didn't make much use of the new technology we've been into since 2002. And that's one of the reasons why we were disappointed.
Upload that shit to YouTube.
Kill a lot of people. Yes, please. That's not nice. No one wants to kill people. Well, some people do, but not me. American Made. Number 2 this week, only week in the theater. Tom Cruise acting crazy, as always. $50 million budget so far. Wow, $81 million. That took me by surprise, truth be told. $81 million.
That's a turn for Tom Cruise in the box office.
Well, I mean, he always does okay. I'm sure that movie will make well over $150 million by the end of its run. But Doug Liman directed. It's got Tom Cruise in it and producer Brian Grazer. So that's got some big names behind it. So I'm glad that it's doing well. Tom Cruise kind of... You know, when people talk about Tom Cruise, I don't think, even though I just did, but I remember the Oprah days, but I don't think people, I don't think people use the word crazy anymore with Tom Cruise. I did, because I just, I always remember Scary Movie 3, but.
I never thought he was really crazy, but he's definitely very eccentric.
He really went off the deep end for a while there.
Well, you got the whole Scientology and all that, but we won't get into that.
No. I mean, but he's a good actor. I mean, he's certainly that people love to watch, and he's a big enough name now that he certainly chooses his own project. So, good job, Tom Cruise and Doug Liman. It's a pretty good box office for that. Kingsman, The Golden Circle, third. I'm sorry, this week is number three. Last week is number one, but it fell two spots. $104 million budget. Nick, you want to take a guess as to where this is?
Has to be around $300 million at least.
No, you're overshooting again.
Oh, God. $200 at least.
Close. You're $8 million off. Well, you're $7.1 million off. It's $192 million. So that's not bad. That's one of the ones we're going to cover today. I'm really excited about it. I had West Virginia Pride, John Denver, Take Me Home, Mountain Mama, West Virginia. I loved it. We're going to get into that later, but that's how that one did. Lego Ninjago, number four this week and number three last week. It fell a spot. Kind of a lukewarm reception, but it so far has done $58 million. We're going to get into that a little later, too. we're definitely going to cover it later. I did love Jackie Chan. Not much else about it, but we'll get into that. So that's Lego Ninjago. Number five, Flatliners. First week in the box office. $19 million budget. Only is done less than 10. Just a tad less than $10 million. Not great. But considering what it's up against, not bad either. I don't think it's terrible.
Yeah, I mean, that's very true. It's Flatliners. It's very interesting, but you know, of all the other movies, I'm not going to pick that one.
No, I can understand that. That's very understandable. But that one we'll talk about next week. And I did happen to see it early, and I'm going to watch it again. But lukewarm about that one as well. I have my problem with it, but...
Did you see the original with Kiefer Sutherland?
You know, I haven't. I've known it existed, but I will definitely have to watch that this week. But I've not seen the original. However, Kiefer is in this one.
Oh, what?
So, yeah, he is in this movie, so that's what I thought was really cool. So, good for being self-aware. That's the word I couldn't think of before. Self-aware. That's good for the movie for trying to be self-aware of what it is. Number six this week. Number 16 last week. It really rose. Battle of the Sexes. Emma Stone, Steve Carell. Bill Pullman, Elizabeth Shue, Sarah Silverman. Doesn't give a budget. So far, domestic, it's only done $4 million. Not great, not strong at all, but, I mean, it's going... It opened on September 22nd, limited. September 29th, it went wide. I'm hoping that it will go wider yet, because that's not going to be much of a boost.
Yeah, do you think it was the wrong time to release this kind of movie?
Oh, I don't know. It's all just a guessing game. I mean, they're going on data, and what in the past has sold well during what time of year. So, I mean, it could just be anyone's game, but maybe there's just too much else going on that are people that just didn't gravitate towards that. I don't know. I'm assuming what it wanted was the back-to-school crowd, and it didn't get the back-to-school crowd. So, but I assume that movie will just die a quiet death. Number seven this week, number four last week, American Assassin. Michael Keaton doing some weird stuff. $33 million budget. So far, $44 million. Not strong, not great, but it's... it might have one more decent weekend in the box office before it's completely dead. So, that's unfortunate, but...
Yeah.
This coming Friday is going to knock out a lot of things. So, this will be very interesting.
Yeah. I'm very excited for this Friday.
Yeah, most people should. Most movie fans are, because there's a lot of good stuff coming out this Friday. Number eight this week, six last week. Home Again, Nick. How do you feel about Home Again creeping up still?
Hey, you know, Reese Witherspoon, she's still got it.
Reese has still got it.
She's gonna have it for at least a couple more years. You know, I'm not a soothsayer, but she's aged very well, and I don't think she's done making movies yet.
No, of course not. I'm sure she likes getting those $4 million paycheck days. Boy, if only.
But home again. It's you know, if you haven't heard our podcast, go listen to it. It's pretty good.
Nothing groundbreaking, but
yeah, we don't save the world or anything, but
funny you mentioned save the world. Put a hold on that a little bit, because saving the world gets you the forbidden action here soon. But well, production budget of $12 million worldwide has done $25 million, so that's probably making money as of right now. That's way past its production budget and advertising budget. So, I mean, it might not have done well, but it might not have done, you know, gangbusters in the box office, but it's still making money. So, you know, I mean, that's enough to be said for that. Till Death Do Us Part, number 9 this week. And number 10 is Mother. Not a strong showing for the Aronofsky movie Mother. But some other ones I think of note. Stronger, number 13. Friend Request, number 7. Or sorry, number 14. We have Wind River holding steady at 17. Spider-Man, Leap, and Brad's Status in the top 20. War for Planet of the Apes, Nick, you'll be sad to know, has just been kicked out at the top 20.
Oh.
I know. Heartbreaking.
I'm still a little, well, I don't know. I thought Spider-Man would be out, would have been out at least like this week, at least out of the top 20. That's awesome. It's still hanging in there.
Spider-Man's still kicking. It's still at some of the theaters I was able to drive by this week, and it was still playing. Like, it still had a full show list, like a full like roster of, you know, noon, 2, 3, 4, 5, you know, well, like in that time area, like a 1, 3, 5, 7, and 9, like it still had all the show times there.
Wow, that's some pretty good stuff. All right.
Well, it's got some incredible staying power.
Yeah.
Amongst other group big things that have come out. Coming out this past weekend, Flatliners, American Made, that's September 29th. October 6th, Blade Runner 2049, Mountain Between Us, My Little Pony, that's this coming Friday. October 13th, also a Friday, The Foreigner, Happy Death Day, Marshall, Breathe. October 20th, a huge week, Same Kind, Different as Me, Jungle, The Snowman, Only the Brave, Leatherface, Wonderstruck, and Geostorm. October 27th, Jigsaw, Thank You for Your Service, Suburbicon, All I See is You. November 1st has listing for Bad's Mom Christmas. That's a Wednesday, so I don't know if that's going to happen, but it's listed. And then November 3rd, which is that Friday, Thor Ragnarok. And The Killing of a Sacred Deer. So those are your... That's a pretty strong October lineup. So you have a lot of good movies. I think.
Oh, yeah.
Blade Runner, Mountain Between Us. The Foreigner, I think Breathe will do well. Only the Brave will make... that movie will make tons of money. And anyone who does any kind of service, like a service job, like a military or firefighter, policeman, any one of those jobs, I mean, people are all going to flock to this movie for sure.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
Jigsaw, I think, will do some decent box office because of how big the Saw franchise was. Thank You for Your Service, I think, wants to be an Oscar contender. Thor Ragnarok, of course, is going to be a huge Marvel movie. So we got a good, although that's November 3rd, but we have a good October, early November. So that's very exciting. Current events, I think we got some cool ones. Charlie and His Angels, they are back. For good or for bad, they are back. Kristen Stewart, she's being considered for an angel.
Oh.
Kristen Stewart, of course, you know her from the Twilight Saga and Snow White and the Huntsman. And Elizabeth Banks is looking to direct. What do you think about the Kristen Stewart?
Man, I don't like it.
Don't like it.
I don't have anything against Kristen Stewart. I like most of the movies that she's in. I don't see any emotion. And I know that's one thing that's always brought up with her, but I just don't see her as a Charlie's Angel, you know? A Charlie's Angel, you know, obviously it's very popular. It was a very popular show in the 70s and all that. And the movies that came out early 2000s, I want to say mid 2000s. You know, there's just this charisma and kind of thing you gotta have to be a Charlie's Angel, and I just don't see Kristen Stewart with it. You know,
I mean, Cameron Diaz, Lucy Liu, and Drew Barrymore, they're the most updated recent Charlie's Angels, I mean, as far as movies go. And I kind of had fun with them. They were fun to watch. They were early 2000s. It was a weekend movie you go see with the friends, or you take a date just to laugh. Nothing crazy, but it was. And Bernie Mac, I think, was in them. I mean, they were always fun. I will admit, I had fun during watching those movies. I don't know how I feel about another reboot, but Elizabeth Banks might have a fresher take on it. So that, I mean, that can never be a bad thing to have a fresh take on an older idea. So
also with I also heard with Kristen Stewart, Lupita Nyong'o.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know who that is. She was, she was in Star Wars, The Force Unleashed, playing, I don't know who she played, but, you know, she's a pretty decent actor. She's, in the upcoming, you know, Black Panther movie and all that.
There you go.
Yeah, I mean.
Is she also going to be an angel?
I want to say so, yeah. But, again, not too sure. Those were the only, like, when I was looking up anything that had to do with the Charlie's Angels, it was Kristen Stewart and, Lupita, Nyong'o. Those were, like, the two names that they had listed as actors go.
Who would you pick as your angels?
Oh, wow. That was actually something I was thinking of, because I thought you'd ask that. Oh, man. You know what? That's a really good question. One of my front runners, I was thinking Jessica Alba.
Jessica Alba.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I like it. I can see it.
I could see it. I could see Jessica Alba as the same kind of angel that would have been the Cameron Diaz, Drew Barrymore, or Lucy Liu. I think newer would be like even younger. For example, I think. Most Ellen Page would probably be considered Hermione Granger, not Hermione Granger. What's her Emma Watson?
Watson, yeah.
Everyone's going younger these days, so I feel like that's. Yeah. But Ellen Page and Emma Watson are pretty good.
Yeah. Okay. I could def rock Ellen Page and Emma Watson as two Charlie's Angels. I could see that. I could like that. I could go watch that in a theater.
That would be a huge departure, but, I mean, it could work. Don't get me wrong. I think it could work.
Kristen Stewart, not so much. Sorry, Kristen.
Yeah, I don't see her as an angel, but, again, when the movie comes out, maybe something is different, and we're just like, oh, my God, Kristen Stewart, Actress of the Year Award. Maybe. Yeah. Who knows? What else we got? We have... Oh, that one's also, it will be based off the 70s and 80s show, and it's looking for a June 6th release of this coming year, so 2018. So that's pretty quick, actually. Looks to be a short shoot. 1988's year my brother was born, Coming to America sequel. That was Eddie Murphy and Arsenio Hall. Prince Akeem and his friend Sammy come to America. He does not want the arranged marriage he has set up for and wants to find a wife in this country. Jonathan Levine and Kenya Barris, to direct and write, will be up front. But the thing is, Eddie Murphy isn't attached yet. He wants to see what they come up with. That he wants to see what Levine and Barris are able to come up with before he commits. But I got a question for you, Eddie Murphy. What else you got going on? Come on,
certainly not doing any new stand-up.
No, or new movies. I mean... I don't know how many more Shrek movies you can possibly milk out of that franchise, but
at least three more, and then you can go off into a, you know, maybe a donkey, maybe the donkey gets his own movie. You never know.
You know, I was perusing the dollar bin at Walmart one time, and I saw it was in Spanish, so I don't, the title was in Spanish, but it translated, it was Los Tres Diablos. It was Puss in Boots' Three Kittens, And they were off causing mayhem somewhere. I thought that was hilarious.
Oh my god.
I didn't purchase it, and I regret not purchasing it.
Los Tres Diablos.
Yeah.
Check that out.
That was, yeah, in the dollar bin at Walmart. That would have been a lot of fun. A lot of fun. Denis Villeneuve, who has been all over the movie world lately, he's been all over the movie world because of going back all the way to 2013. Well, going back even further, but I think the most recognizable titles, starting in 2013, Prisoners, Enemy, Sicario, Arrival, Blade Runner. We all know that Blade Runner is going to be... I would be surprised if Blade Runner was anything less than great. Arrival was up for Best Picture. Sicario was up for Best Picture. And Prisoners was fantastic. I did not see Enemy. That's one I did not see. But I can speak for the rest of them. I mean, he has a very good resume up to this point. Mm-hmm. And he's looking to helm Cleopatra. Cleopatra was, from 1963, a huge, huge investment from the studio, from Fox Studio, which it didn't make its... Fox or Paramount? I should have written this down, and I didn't. I think it was Fox, but it could have been Paramount. One of the studios, it did not make its money back until sometime in the 70s. So that tells you how much of a money sink that one is. In 1963... And probably a year or two before that, the budget was $44 million. Like, can you imagine in 1973, oh, God, $44 million?
The inflation. Could you imagine making it now?
Yeah, that's crazy. So it didn't see its money back. Although I did read it, it was one of the highest earners of that year, but it still didn't make its money back. So that's kind of ballsy to take on a movie like Cleopatra. So good for him, Denis Villeneuve. He obviously has a vision he wants to go with. So. I should agree with that.
Very true. I mean, God, yeah, I totally agree with you. I haven't seen Enemy, or I'm shooting myself in the foot. I've never seen Sicario either. It's one of those movies that excited me for a little bit when I saw the trailer. But Prisoners, obviously.
I remember Prisoners. I worked with the producer John Stark on reshoots for a movie in Pittsburgh. And I remember hearing later, yeah, much later, that he was trying to, I remember John Stark II, he emailed some people that he worked with on the reshoots for Abduction and asked if we were ready, if we were available, because he was trying to bring Prisoners to Pittsburgh, but it never happened. So that would have been that would have been really awesome if
Prisoners would have been rad.
I would have been able to meet Villeneuve before he was, like, enormous. That would have been really, really cool, but... Prisoners is a damn good movie, regardless of where it was shot.
Well, anyways,
what you got
we got the Disaster Artist. You hear about this?
No, Nick, I haven't. Why don't you fill us in?
They didn't go searching out in the city for a golden shell, but they actually they won one at the 65th San Sebastian International Film Festival. The golden shell is an award for the best film. So Disaster Artist, James Franco, Dave Franco, Seth Rogen, got the whole bunch in there. That's the movie that I'm excited to see, just because I'm a huge fan of them. You know, keep your eyes open. Keep on the lookout.
We talked about the trailer in weeks past. That looks like a damn good movie. It really is. I think it's going to creep up there and be talked about like crazy coming late October, November, December to Oscar time, so.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really excited for that. Well, I honestly, now that I'm thinking about it, I'm actually more excited than I'm willing to let on about the Disaster Artist. It's going to be great. I have no doubt it'll be fantastic. Dave Franco, who's in a lot of things, he's also in Ninjago, which we will talk about later today. More Terminator news. I love Terminator. July 26, 2019 is the day that is pegged for the next Terminator movie. And it's a long way off, but for me, like, even having a date a long way off, having a date pegged is better than never again. So I'm really excited for that. Arnold, as we talked about before, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Linda Hamilton are returning. Deadpool's Tim Miller will look to direct, and James Cameron will be in the producer's chair. I'm sure he'll have a lot of... I'm sure it'll be more like Tim Miller and James Cameron direct. with the way that man likes to micromanage on set, so
Yeah, I mean, you're not gonna trust your kid with a stranger, right?
I mean, you wouldn't. Yeah, you're right. A weird analogy, but I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying.
Thank you.
Every podcast everywhere that talks about the Terminator movie, every single episode should be called, of every podcast anywhere, of any of the hundreds of thousands of podcasts out in the universe, the ones that talk about the Terminator movie on the 26th of July 2019, all the episodes should be called, finally, The Wrong Gets Righted. That's what I thought of. David Goyer and Josh Friedman will be the ones writing. And Cameron has confirmed that it takes place after Terminator 2 Judgment Day, erasing all the canon after. So that's exciting. He's the king of movies, and he has come to reclaim that title. I have no doubt.
You could almost act like those movies were never shot.
Well, three. Well. I'm okay with three. I own three. I own Salvation only because at the time it was part of the Terminator universe. Wasn't crazy about Genesis. I just get... It's almost like... One time I got into a fight at school in elementary... Not, I'm sorry, in middle school over something really dumb. And mm-hmm. my buddy and I, my best friend Mike and I, our moms came. My mom had to come from work. His mom had to leave work early, and they came to get us. And my mom gave me this very disappointed look. Like, Grayson, are you really fighting? What are you fighting over? Why? Be better
Grayson,
than
what,
that.
Why?
And she gave what me... You know, everyone knows that look your parents gives you, parents give you when they're disappointed in you. That's the look I give in my heart when I watch Terminator movies that have nothing to do with James Cameron, because they're just to see the once a franchise once on top of the world, literally one of the best franchises ever, ground to nothing. It just it broke my heart. But the wrongs will be righted very soon in 2019. Trailer watch. The first trailer I always like to pick as one of the movies coming out very soon, The Mountain Between Us, Idris Elba, Kate Winslet, Beau Bridges, and Dermot Mulroney, who I have been very fortunate in my past to work with and called Dermy, as I was told to call him by my accountant at the time.
Dermy.
I like this trailer. I think with two lesser people that aren't Idris Elba and Kate Winslet, or maybe just two less... I don't want to say less talented because I don't think that's the right phrase, but less quality actors, this movie would just come out and die without a whimper. But it's got a fighting chance because of these two, I think.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you there. I mean, Idris Elba and Kate Winslet are the, you know, they're going to make the film, obviously. I mean, obviously there's going to be some breathtaking shots. I mean, my God, set in the mountains, but...
And that you dog. Know, let's not forget about the dog.
Yeah. Oh, forgot about the dog.
Story is these Idris and Kate Winslet, their characters are, they have to get back to the city quickly, and they help each other out by getting on the, one has a, they look to the character Beau Bridges is playing for a quick flight. They're both in the same thing, and in the beginning they're trying to book flights, and they're all flights are full, and they come to this little, I can only guess they find this pilot that does a smaller runway, has planes, and they agree somehow or strike a deal to get chartered on the same plane back to the city. The plane goes down. They have to survive in the wilderness, and there's a dog. I'm really excited about the dog.
Don't get too attached to that dog, Grayson.
I'm sure the dog will make it. After the public outcry from that movie that supposedly was hurting dogs on set. Can you imagine the dog didn't make it out of this movie? Although that movie reminds me of The Gray with Liam Neeson,
mm-hmm.
killer of all wolves. That movie was it was ultimately, it took me about a week to finally admit that movie was just bad all the way around, but I loved it. I love Liam telling that guy he's going to die and to just go to sleep in peaceful slumber and go and just let death take him. I think that was awesome. I think that was awesome listening to Liam talk about his father, and that music cues up at the campfire scene. It's just, it's really, there are parts in that movie that are really good. So I'm hoping Mountain Between Us is great. The Greatest Showman, this is the second trailer. Hugh Jackman, Zac Efron, Rebecca Ferguson, Michelle Williams, all are cast members in The Greatest Showman.
High hopes. High hopes for this movie, Grayson. First time I watched the trailer, I was like, damn, this looks good. Hugh Jackman looks good. This looks like it's going to be a good movie.
I think so, and I'm going to go as far as to say, I saw it with all the trailers from, it was on the trailers of the movies I watched this week, and it's, to me, it is what filmmaking is. At least the way this trailer is cut, it is, it's mystery, it's love, it's passion, it's dedication, it's hope. That is, those are all things that I relate to filmmaking, at least for me, and it's, I'm very excited for this movie. It comes out Christmas Day. I'm hoping it's a contender for Best Picture, although realistically I don't think it will be, but I can always hope. So.
Very true. Oh, man.
And I do like
the I can't lie when I say that trailer gets me hyped. That's exactly what you said. That looks like the kind of movie that makes you fall in love with filmmaking and
movies
in general.
I think so. One of my favorite. It starts with P.T. P.T. Barnum is the historical figure being portrayed, but it starts with Hugh Jackman sitting in a room stamping on some, you know, old, he has a time clock job, which is 9 to 5, punch in, punch out, and his company gets closed, and the guy, there's a bald guy who looks a lot like him, might even be him, I don't know, says, good luck with your next job, and he goes home, says to his wife, I'm sorry, this isn't the life I promised you. And, you know, then the next shot is him and Michelle Williams, his wife, up on the roof with their girls, and he puts a little metal, a brass thing over a candle and spins it, and he's looking at the sheets that they have laundry, hung up with laundry, and he says, girls, I think I have an idea. And then one of the next scenes is he's talking to a little person, I don't know what the correct term is these days, he's talking to a little person. He gets down on his knees, and you can tell the guy, he's like, ah, geez, someone else to make fun of me. And he says, I have a show and I need a star, and like that just gets my heart warm because like, oh, I'm so excited for this movie.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I gotta say one of the most powerful moments in the trailer for me was when he's talking to Zac Efron. He's like, you know, you have a knack for show business. He's like, well, I've never heard of that, because I just made it up, buddy. Come on.
That is really cool. One of my concerns, of course, is, my concern number one is that I don't know the real P.T. Barnum. I have not done any major research, so I don't know who he was, but a lot of people did not like how Walt Disney was portrayed in the Tom Hanks movie Saving Mr. Banks, because they said that was not at all accurate as to who he was. Didn't show any of the bad side of Walt Disney, and I'm afraid that they're going to do the same here, or just completely misrepresent the man. Again, I've not done any extensive research, so I can't tell you if it looked accurate or not, but I'm assuming that it's going to leave out whatever bad stuff P.T. was involved in.
I just know from a little bit of history that he was like one of the biggest, you know, he was basically one of the people that made a you know, circus is, you know, popular. He was kind of the first guy to engineer
That's really exciting. Circus is almost a thing of the past, so it'll be even cooler because we're seeing a part of old America that's almost, that is 99% dead, circuses. It doesn't exist much anymore. Tomb Raider. I know a lot of people in the video game world are looking forward to this. Alicia Vikander, Dominic West, Daniel Wu, Nick Frost, Walton Goggins. This is the first time I've seen the actual trailer for the movie. This is the reboot of the Angelina Jolie movies. I gotta say, I think you can't discuss Tomb Raider without discussing a recent video game franchise. The one on PlayStation originally, the Tomb Raider 1, 2, and 3, Lara Croft in the jungle fighting tigers, you know. But then the new Tomb Raider we have here, because of Uncharted, because of Tomb Raider, it's darker. It, you know, tells a very linear story. It takes the path of the story, a very story intensive Lara Croft, and I'm very excited to see what looks like it might be a pretty faithful video game adaptation. I'm hoping they're not trying to make the actual game. They're just making the movie. You know, it's set in a very similar but alternate universe, so it doesn't have to follow any of the game plot lines. I'm hoping that is the case.
Yeah, and without, I mean, I'm not talking mad shit on the, you know, the first Tomb Raider that came out, but I feel like this is the Tomb Raider that we deserve to see first, you know? At least that's what the trailer looks to me.
What's the phrase from Batman? It's he's not the hero we deserve, but the one we need now, or not the one we need, but the one we deserve.
Yeah, somewhere along the lines of that, I believe.
Not the one Gotham need, but the one deserve. So I'm really excited about that. I think that's going to turn the table for video game adaptation for movies. I think Uncharted definitely will. And there's a lot of other games that I've heard of that have been tossed around for screenplays. So I'm hoping that Tomb Raider represents that franchise well, and we get maybe one or two sequels out of it.
Oh yeah.
Jeepers Creepers 3, it came out very limited on September 26th. I somehow missed that, but I've actually been looking forward to this for a long time. I love the first two. And Jeepers Creepers 3, Gina Phillips, Meg Foster, Jonathan Breck, all are in this movie. It looks like they're bringing people back that have seen this thing before and weren't killed into a battle to finally take this damn thing out. I hope. Or there could be a Jeepers Creepers 4, whatever.
I
mean,
I just hope there's a third one, and that's it. Well, the first time I saw Jeepers Creepers, I was scared. that movie legit made me scared. How I've talked all this stuff on podcasts before, how I've not been scared for movies. This is a movie that has actually scared me, I will say.
I'll agree that the first one's pretty terrifying. I wasn't too impressed. I'm not saying impressed as in like quality, but impressed as in scared by the second one, because I kind of already knew what it was.
Yeah, exactly. But I feel like in the second one, you're learning, you know, obviously you're learning more about it.
Yeah, and then when that, I'm hoping that guy's in it that is sitting with a shotgun waiting for it to come back 23
years. Oh, like, yes, I totally forgot about that part.
Yeah, that's that'd awesome. Be awesome. Yeah, I agree. That'd be awesome.
Because he's just sitting up on the scarecrow, right? Or he's up in the barn. They have him in the barn, right?
Yeah, he's up in the barn. And in the end of the second one, the dude's sitting in a chair with a shotgun. He's just like, I'm waiting for him to come back. Like, are you kidding? That's awesome.
Oh, man.
All right, we have
an explosive first 10 minutes. That will be.
Oh, yeah, 100%. If they go that way. I don't know if they will. But the trailer didn't show much as far as story, but we will see. And it was an international trailer, yeah. I mentioned, but we will see. All right, so of the three, I think of the three being Kingsman, Lego Ninjago, and Stronger, I think I'm going to – Stronger I'd like to talk about. Now, Nick, have you had a chance to see Stronger?
I haven't seen Stronger, no.
Stronger, I did get a chance to see Stronger. I went kind of back and forth with it as I was sitting there with my pad and paper in the theater, annoying people sitting to the left and to the right of me. But I want to say initially, but I do want to say on the outset that it does have a 96% on Rotten Tomatoes. That's pretty high. Not many movies reach in the upper 90s, but it did. So people are really enjoying this. Maybe it's because it's, you know, patriotic, and this was the movie this was shot opposite Patriots Day, which I knew the accountant on, but this is the other movie, the Jake Gyllenhaal, that was shooting the same time that Patriots Day was shooting. Patriots Day was not well received, and this one was, I guess. So, the story is Jake Gyllenhaal is, let me bring up the page here. Jake Gyllenhaal is Jeff Bowman, a guy who really is late for a lot of things. He doesn't, as he even calls himself later, a major screw up. And he's trying to, in the beginning of the movie, he's trying to get back together with his girlfriend, Erin Hurley, played by Tatiana Maslany, who does a very good job, by the way. He's trying to be better for her. He's trying to be there for her. He's not trying to be late for anything. He's trying to be the guy that she wanted him to be before she broke up with him a third time.
Ooh.
And during this fateful day, he makes a sign. He tells her he's going to be there. She's running the Boston Marathon, many, many miles. And he's at the end waiting for her with a sign, trying to prove to her he's changed, he's a changed man. And when he is there, he is caught on ground zero of the bombing and gets both of his legs. When the bomb goes off, he wakes up a few minutes later, being taken to the hospital. He's kind of out of it, and then we catch up with him while he's in the hospital. Both of his legs have been amputated.
Whew.
Yeah, can you imagine? Can you imagine?
That's just too rough.
I don't think it's rough, but it's... I mean, no, it definitely is rough, but there are people who do very well with this kind of injury. So I don't want to say it's like, it just, that's got to be the worst, but it's not the worst. There are people who deal with this and deal with it very well. It's a really unfortunate accident that he was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. And what's wonderful is that gets brought up a time or two, Aaron's guilt. Not that she didn't even ask him to be there, but, I mean, how do you play that off as put yourself in Aaron's, the girl he's trying to win back over her shoes, knowing that you don't particularly want to see him right now. You guys are breaking up. You've broken up for the third time. You just want some distance. And he comes to see you, makes a sign, and because of you, he's there and gets his legs blown off. That's a tough one. You know, I don't know how I would deal with that issue myself, but the movie does very well. The screenplay, it handles it better than I thought it would. It doesn't just gloss over it. It really makes it one of the central. The writers credited are. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Nick.
No, never mind. I wasn't gonna say anything important.
The writers credited are John Polano and Jeff Bauman, who is the real life amputee. So that's pretty cool.
In terms of writing, what do you think is like the main point of Jake Gyllenhaal's struggle?
Well, the movie's called Stronger, and the term Boston Strong is tossed around more than just a couple of times. What I really love, I'll tell you one thing I really love at the outset, within the first couple of minutes of him kind of dealing with life after the surgery, is people are trying to make him this hero, and he doesn't quite see himself as one, and he doesn't ever see himself as one. That's one thing I really appreciated, and I'm hoping that's one of the things that the real-life Jeff Bowman would have brought to the script, because I think if it would have just been a writer in Hollywood, you know, a writer without talking to the source material, would have made it completely all about being a hero, which I'm glad that it didn't. There was a lot of pushback there by Jeff, you know, his family, his friends, the whole city, the Boston Red Sox, the other teams in the area were all really making him this hero. And you know, his line is, "I'm a hero when all I did was stand in a place and get my legs blown off." And that's kind of what he struggles with. And what I love most is it's really the camera work, I think, tells almost the entire story without there needing to be much dialogue. And it's what I mean by that is it's really... There are long. This is like the opposite of what, like a Michael Bean. How in Michael Bay movie, like the cuts are like every 2 seconds. There's a cut or an edit every 2 seconds. This is the opposite of that. It's not.
Oh God.
You know, I mean, edits or cuts are held for, you know, shots are held for sometimes minutes. When you see this dialogue play out between two characters, a lot of the time it's between Jeff Bowman and Aaron Hurley about the dynamic and their relationship and what's going on in both of their heads, and they're both just scared kids, you know, they were just young to be just dealing with this extraordinary situation.
You're definitely feeling this, like, this real vibe between them, and is it awkward?
Well, no, because what that kind of camera work does, the up-close camera work where you have two actors that are their heads are literally inches from the camera, are still in frame, and it, with the conversation, rack focuses between the two when they're talking. That brings a certain immediacy and a closeness. It puts the audience right there with them, and that's what I like about that kind of camera work. Whenever I see that, that's what I really like. I mean, Mother did it to some extent. I know a movie I love, Battle LA, does it quite a great deal, and it's very effective when done right. So I'm glad that was a theme adopted. Other characters to join Jake and Tatiana are Miranda Richardson as Patty Bowman, Jeff's mother. Oh, here's what I wanted. Clancy Brown. I love Clancy Brown. He is Big Jeff. He is Jeff's father. And Patty O'Neill, Aunt Jen. Lenny Clark plays Uncle Bob. Nate Richmond, Big D. I like to make note of that because there are people who may know them. I like to make those are also some of the cast. I mean, those are very important characters. Even though they're not main characters, they're still important characters. So that's interesting. And Carlos Sands plays Carlos. If you watch the movie, Carlos Sands is the man who rescues him, who takes him out of that awful situation and gets him to a hospital quickly.
It's the actual person.
Yeah, yes, I think so. I did see that as himself credit. So.
Oh, that's awesome.
Or maybe I'm wrong about that, but it does have Carlos Sands as Carlos, so I don't know if... I did see as himself at least once or twice in the credits. I could be getting confused now.
The Stronger was I didn't see it at all, but you know I was excited because I am a fan of Jake Gyllenhaal. Overall, how would you for his performance, for him enduring this struggle of, you know, not having legs and trying to build not only his confidence but also getting back to where he's able to, you know, move throughout the world, whether it's using prosthetics or wheelchair. How do you think he goes about it?
I think Gyllenhaal nails it. I do, and I'll tell you why I think that is because there are two scenes that stand out to me as far as looking at his ability as an actor to really portray that role is. There's a scene when the camera is up behind him. He's in the hospital, up behind him to the left, and like just over his left shoulder. And in the frame, or on the right side, you have Gyllenhaal who's looking left, and you have Tatiana who's playing his girlfriend Erin looking right. They're looking at each other, and then in between them, down lower, further down the frame, you can in the background of the frame, you see the doctor's unwrapping his bandages and. Boy, the pain on his face. I've thought for a second my legs were blown off, and I was feeling what he was feeling. It was terrible. When he winces, when he jerks, you feel it. I saw other people in the theater too. They jerked their legs as soon as he jerked his. When they tore the bandages off, oh man, it's tough to watch. I imagine it's 100 times tougher to experience. It's tough to watch.
Jeez, yeah. Louise. Oh man.
And there's another. Scene in particular when it's actually the poster shot when he's for the first time he has use of his new legs that were built for him and he's trying to stand up and walk and everyone's congratulating him, telling him what a good job he's doing, how much he's a trooper and a hero, and it's complete pain on his face. It's pain, he's a second away from giving up, and it's just that I think is a testament to Jake Gyllenhaal as an actor. I think this role really will do well for him.
Mm-hmm.
It's a hell of a role. For him, it's a hell of a character. Jeff Bowman is a very strong man. I'm proud to know him. Even though I don't know him, like I'm proud to know of him.
Yeah.
For the strength he has. There are the music at times. The score really is powerful at key points. And what I love, I think the absolute most about this movie is it really highlights how everyone around him is affected by this. Everyone's helping him. Everyone's hurting with him. His mother, his father, his friends, even his neighbors are. Everyone is going through this pain that he is going through, and it's. I think that is very interesting. I don't think movies cover that side of it very much. We're often just given the main character to experience the world through, but it's, and the supporting cast kind of, they're there to help him, but. In this one, they're suffering with him, and that's what I think is a beautiful thing.
Yeah, it gets more of that, you know, the realism, you know, really shows you, I mean, obviously, this was a tragedy, certainly in American history, and Boston history, it's just, it is a shame what happened, but, you know, it's obviously not just one man suffering, or... Even though he's suffering too, you know, he lost his legs. That's horrible, you know.
I think one of the most important things to focus on is when you're looking at the character of Jeff, and was he done correctly? And I want to say, even though I don't know much about that incident besides that it happened, I would say that this is probably a nail on the head situation where Jake Gyllenhaal nailed it.
Yeah.
With the real Jeff, you see clips after the movie of the real Jeff Bowman and his girlfriend, and at key moments of their relationship, both during the timeline of the movie and after. It's really quite touching, it's heartwarming. So definitely stay to watch those. This is a movie that you should absolutely see. This is 100%. You can pay $20 for it, and you're still justified. Every dollar, every cent, is justified to see Jake Gyllenhaal go through this struggle of Jeff Bowman. 100%. So that was, we have that one under one of the minor reviews, but one of the major reviews, Lego Ninjago, switching gears a little bit.
Who?
Who indeed?
Ninjago.
I was thinking, as I was watching this, I loved the Lego movie. The first one with Chris Pratt and Elizabeth Banks, who we were talking about earlier. She's looking to direct the new Charlie's Angels. I loved that movie. And that movie had a 96% Rotten Tomatoes. Lego Batman, I also loved. Like, I wasn't lukewarm. I loved Lego Batman. 91%. This one has a 50%, and it shows. it's the person I was seeing it with, there was not often a smile on her face. I was kind of disappointed that she wasn't laughing more. I was. But then again, I think I was laughing at the really dumb humor. So
I laughed a lot too during this movie, and I don't have that much Lego experience except for playing with Legos as a child. I did see parts of the original Lego movie, and I thought it was very funny and pretty good, you know. But this one, oh man, it was interesting to say the least, you know.
The story's a bit convoluted.
It was more than I expected, I think. But it definitely tailored to the Lego movie, you know, where you didn't have to pick up the pieces to understand what was going on, you know. And if you step on a Lego, you might want to watch out for some Ninjago warriors coming at you. But there was definitely some funny moments, which was basically your basic kids movie. When the first few minutes of this movie, I could hear kids throughout the theater saying these names of these Ninjago members, and I'm like, okay, well, I'm not in the loop, which I thought I was. But I thought this movie kind of had some dark undertones, you know. This movie might have daddy issues, but I don't.
Well, it's weird because Leloid, how we know his name is from the trailer, Lloyd, Leloid. He is suffering from extreme father issues, and he is Dave Franco, Jackie Chan, Dave Franco. I'm looking at all the big names here. Zach Woods, probably Justin Theroux are the bigger names, and joining them are Fred Armisen, who does Cole, the voice, Kamal Nanjiani, Jay, Michael Pena does Kai, Abby Jacobson, Naya. Oh, Zach Woods does Zane. David Burrows, he's a ninja voice. Oh, and Justin Theroux is Garmadon. What? Lloyd is suffering from father issues and just wants his father to be a father, and he needs him and he wants him in his life. And Garmadon, he wants to. He kind of wants to be a father, but kind of wants to destroy the world.
And you can't have both, can you?
I mean, I guess you can. I mean, he's really split by just wanting to cause mayhem and be a father. But, I mean, it begins one way and ends another way. You don't have to be a brain scientist to figure, or a brain surgeon to figure out which way it starts and then which way it ends. But it's... I thought this movie succeeded on a few points, one of them being Meowthra.
Oh my god.
the giant live-action cat that is just...
I loved it.
Is just terrorizing Ninjago City, knocking over buildings, and these these poor people that get in its way just get eaten and get swatted and buildings fall over and crumble. And the laser pointer, I think, is awesome. I just think that's so clever, the laser pointer.
Dude, he pulls it out and there's nothing happening, and then points it at, you know, a building in the city, and then this cat just comes in. Come on now.
I think Meowth is pretty clever.
Yes. Yeah, I don't know who came up with that, but obviously it kind of fit into what Jackie Chan was doing, you know, with his character, I guess. But yeah, I enjoyed Meowthra. I gotta ask you, Grayson, how long do you think it takes to rebuild a Lego city, a Lego Ninjago? Because there's a lot of stuff that happens to this city.
I would imagine it was, you're asking me a serious question in Lego Ninjago. I don't know how long it takes to build a Lego. However long it takes, whosever imagination we're in, which is the young Leloid, to build a Lego tower. I guess it's.
There's a couple times in the movie where we're reminded of a Pilates studio that just is destroyed.
And more than a couple times, several times.
Yeah. Leloid just can't get over it, you know? His favorite Pilates studio is wrecked.
No, Lloyd's devastated by his favorite Pilates studio being no more. One of the things I also loved was, well, maybe I didn't love it, but maybe I just didn't understand it, but why you would choose two people to voice as close to Will Ferrell and Will Arnett, why you would choose two people as close to their voice as you possibly could. Like,
oh man, I was questioning myself if I was crazy.
I looked at the list before the movie started to see who was credited as what, but it's Justin Theroux's Glamadon. And Will Arnett, who plays Batman, would have been. Who would he have been? And maybe I've got some head wrong. But at both times, sorry, no, the same character actually. At both times, you think sometimes when Garmadon's talking, that's definitely Will Ferrell, and then oh no, that's got to be Will Arnett. Like there are definitely he sounds like both of them.
Yeah, exactly. It's so. Like I just said to you, you know, it's weird because I'm asking myself in the theater where I know Will Ferrell was not voicing this character, but it just sounds so much like him. And, oh, man. That's funny you bring that up because I was exactly thinking that in the theater. But, man.
It does sound like them. Even though I knew it wasn't, it certainly does sound like them. I don't know why. I kind of loved it and hated it at the same time. It's like I couldn't, like, why would you do that? Why would you do that? But it's...
Which one was your favorite Ninjago?
Well, I gotta go with Leloid. Or you mean the one that wasn't green? of those, I gotta go with Michael Pena because he's the only one I know. As far as names go, he's the only one I know. So, which is some of the kids I heard talking about how they weren't voiced by the same people, and I wondered why wouldn't you? With the Lego Ninjago TV show and this, why wouldn't you voice them by the same people? That just seems silly to me, but then again, I'm sure they had a reason for doing with what they did. They're much smarter people than I am. They're producers, so. go ahead.
The one big thing here is the flute song. It's a Hard Knot Life.
Yeah, Jackie Chan or Master Wu played. That was hilarious. I thought. I loved how the movie opens and closes. That might be my favorite part about this movie, besides Meowthra, is how it opens and how it closes. The kid walking into the shop, and then talking to the old shopkeeper, and there's obviously some mystery there, and the shopkeeper makes a Lego warrior appear out of nowhere, and, you know, then obviously you're, okay, well, if he's Master Wu, then obviously the kid is Leloid, and it's wildly fun, that opening and that closing. Listen to Jackie Chan talk to this kid.
Yeah, dude, I totally agree with you, and that's my point about Meowthra being in this whole mix is, like, you know, that fit in perfectly. But, yeah, I totally agree with the beginning and end to this movie was, you know, Jackie Chan brings this kid just comes into this old China shop, you know, making a muck of everything, and Jackie Chan's, hey, you want to hear this story? Not really. But, you know, it happens a little bit like that.
Wow. You make Jackie Chan sound like his old cantankerous old man.
Yeah. I don't know, you know, Jackie Chan's. I can't do a good impression of him without insulting him on accident. Sorry, Jackie. Big fan.
Long time big fan. I think Master Wu, as far as characters go, was the most fleshed out character. Like, you know what I mean? Like, the character that, like, had, you knew everything about. You didn't know much about Garmadon except for, like, what he did and, like, then his eventual change. And even Lloyd. And I love how it almost made fun of superhero movies in general. Because you have the five in school, and everyone's like, I don't know who the ninjas could be. I have no idea who they could possibly be. And then Garmadon attacks, and then all five of them raise their hand and ask to be excused from class.
Can we go to the bathroom?
Always all wearing their colors, by the way.
Yeah. And that was one thing for me. I didn't know how they were gonna, all be a team. And I didn't know it was going to be that simple. Just have them all in high school.
Or whatever. Could have middle school. But I think it's probably high school. You know, it was high school because they talk about how clicky it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is high school. Lloyd.
Oh, man. Those damn cheerleaders, man. Boo Lloyd.
They were just bullies. All they were bullies.
Terrible kids, bullies. Kids out there, don't bully. You know,
it's not cool, no man. For it. Because the kids you're bullying are Ninjagos. You don't want to mess with them.
Yeah.
They're ninjas.
Yeah, exactly.
They will pop your head right off your body. That's what ninjas do. So, the plot here is actually quite simple. Even though it kind of gets crazy at times. I think I went back and forth in my head what I liked more. If I liked the plot or I didn't. I'm not sure that it... I'm not sure personally I liked it. I feel like there's people out there who did. But, I mean, I feel like for the most part, people probably didn't like this particular movie as far as in the LEGO universe. And Rotten Tomatoes so far has spoken to that effect. But I try to look at things without Rotten Tomatoes scores. And this one is definitely the weakest of the three.
I just got a lot of undertones that this Lloyd had some big old daddy issues that he just, you know, his dad goes out and he says, hey, son, I'm going to murder a million people and buy a pack of cigarettes. I'll be back later. And he just doesn't come back.
Garmadon talks about buying cigarettes?
Huh?
Does he talk about buying cigarettes?
No. Oh.
You're bringing up like a scenario. Okay, gotcha. Yeah. Garmadon's kind of a funny character in a way that, like, he's not real because he's so evil, he's not real, you know?
Yeah.
He keeps firing his generals and blasting them off into the volcano.
I don't know, that's inhumane.
Well, it's just mean, man, it's just mean. The island of lost general ones.
Oh, God. Who's the original, you know? Who's the original General One? Who's the leader of that group?
Well, there was a couple that were speaking as if they were more important than the others, so I don't remember which one the original General One was, but...
Slurpee General One.
I think your time is better started rewatching the LEGO Movie or Batman, or lower LEGO Batman, one of the two.
Mm-hmm.
I really do, and I think that this movie probably, I don't know, because I want to say because of the whole Batman and Joker, like the Joker just wanted to be Batman's friend. it's all he wanted in Lego Batman. And then this one, all Lloyd wants is to his father to recognize that it is his son and to be his father. Like he wanted his father back and not Garmadon.
Yeah.
I feel like those plots are pretty similar as far as what the character wanted.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the motivation, but otherwise it's the Lego Batman came out earlier this year, so this was definitely being made at the same time Lego Batman was being made. So otherwise the timelines don't sync up, but Lego Ninjago, the third weakest of the three, but it's still fun. It's got some laughs, some forced laughs, but laughs.
Grayson, what's the next Lego movie that we got coming?
It's anyone's guess, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm sure that with the week showing this one has in the box office, there might not be one for a while.
Lego Joker movie with Leonardo DiCaprio as the voice of the Joker.
Wouldn't that be funny if that's the one, the role he's talking about? Leo's been talking about the Lego Joker movie.
Wouldn't that be
hilarious? That'd be kind of cool though. But ultimately, I mean, I like Leo. Whatever Leo decides to do, I'm behind him 100%. So
yeah.
I totally support his decision to do anything he does. Lego Ninjago. Kind of a take a date to go see it, or maybe like a younger brother. But if you're interested in Lego movies, if you have not seen the Lego Movie or Lego Batman, watch one of those instead. More worth your time than this one. Although Jackie Chan is very entertaining as Master Wu, and as Jackie Chan, the outtakes in the end are pretty funny too when he's keep trying to catch the cups.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, Jackie Chan outtakes are always hilarious.
Yes. Jackie Chan's a real OG.
Kingsman: The Golden Circle, I think the movie of the week, absolutely, is an example of a sequel done right. Even though it's kind of off the chain a little bit, I'm still a fan of it. I mean, this is just it's bigger, it's everything more than the first one was. I mean,
Yeah, there's definitely some similarities, obviously, but it's much bigger. I think it's better than the first one. I really liked the first one, but this one just blew me out of the water, you know?
It was just a nonstop ride. It's almost 2.5 hours. Very aware it was 2.5 hours, but it was always fun. It was always entertaining. Like, you never were bored, for sure.
Oh yeah, so. I had some older people in the movie theater, like you know, up the ways, and they were laughing their asses off. They said, I was walking out of the theater, and they were like, "Wow, this is the funniest movie I've ever seen." I was like, "Oh, really?"
It had its comedy. It certainly was funny at times. It was very self-aware of what it was, and it's. A lot of the comedy from the first one came back in the second one, and a lot of the reward for saving the world came back again. That's always funny. The first Kingsman, when he found the princess locked away right before he saved the world, she promised him he could do something if he saved the world, and that was kind of a funny motivating factor to him saving the world. The same joke is used in this one. Although to less effect, because we've already heard it, of course.
Mm.
Kingsman, Golden Circle, Matthew Vaughn, he just keeps making decent movies.
Yeah, dude. Oh man, there was one transition that I want to bring up that, you know, just had me with a mind. I wish I was wearing a helmet because I had a mind explosion, and you know, it was very messy in the theater. It was a transition where, you know, they're zooming in on the marijuana, and now we're in Cambodia. Yeah. And it's just, oh, wow. It blew my mind. It was awesome. What a great transition. Those are the transitions that just, God, they make you love filmmaking, you know.
Are you a recreational pothead?
What? No.
Is that why you love that transition, the pot transition?
Medicinally, Grayson, Jesus.
Medicinally, fair enough. Matthew Vaughn, so far his directing credits include from 2004 to current, Layer Cake, Stardust, Kick-Ass, X-Men First Class, Kingsman The Secret Service, Kingsman The Golden Circle, and Kingsman 3 has been announced. It will definitely happen, and I Am Pilgrim, which I don't know anything about, but he's also, there's a sequel to Kick-Ass, which he didn't direct, but he produced, so that's also a thing. I'm a big fan of the way Matthew Vaughn tells his stories. He's kind of quirky, and there's always weird, gratuitous violence, but it works within the universe he's telling.
Mm-hmm.
So that's always a good thing. Kingsman: The Golden Circle cast is quite big, actually. We have Taron Egerton returning as Eggsy, Edward Holcraft returning as Charlie. As you remember, in the first one, he was an agent for Kingsman who did not make the cut. Gordon Alexander, he plays a cab driver. Mark Strong returns as Merlin. Hannah Ahlstrom returns as Princess Tildy. And his friends all make an appearance again. Julianne Moore plays quite a menacing Poppy, as we call her.
Yeah, oh man, she was the type of evil that you want to get to know,
or you want to stay the hell away from. One of the two.
Yeah.
she's just, oh my goodness. Colin Firth comes back as Harry Hart. Michael Gambon, people know him. He Dumbledore after from three from the Azkaban to the end of Deathly Hallows, he is Dumbledore, and he plays Arthur, the new Arthur, after the betrayal in the first one. It's a huge cast, enormous cast.
Mm-hmm.
Also joining the cast, there are so many. I like the Statesmen. I like to keep those separate because they're like the American version of the Kingsmen, which I thought was very clever. This, of course, does have source material, so it's not just pulling out of thin air. But also in the cast, Elton John, who plays Elton John, Jeff Bridges, who is the American Arthur version of the Kingsmen, of the Statesmen. He's kind of the leader of the Statesmen. Pedro Pascal, who plays Agent Whiskey. And, of course, Channing Tatum, who plays Agent Tequila. Always a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. I saw a lot of articles, and I didn't bother to read them. But it seemed like people were a little upset about how little Channing Tatum was in it, in Kingsman.
He'll be in the next one. He'll be in the next one.
Definitely. But, I mean, I wasn't upset about how his character was, you know, it told the story, you know.
Well, he had to, I mean, in order to make it personal, I mean, there had to be a Kingsman or a Statesman that got affected by the drug.
And exactly, and he's the resident bad boy, you know.
The last two I want to make a mention of, Emily Watson plays Chief of Staff Fox, and Bruce Greenwood plays the President of the United States, and boy oh boy. If that's not a poke at our president, at our current political situation, I don't know what is. Jeez Louise.
Oh, yeah. My God, dude, the whole quarantine zones. My God.
So, we pick up where the other Kingsman leaves off, right, as we have a little older Eggsy, who is getting a little more serious with his girlfriend, Tildy. And this one, they're meeting the parents. And Kingsman is very much intact. And what starts off, well, what really starts off the trigger incident, what really starts off the movie is we are thrown right into, as Eggsy is walking out of the Kingsman in London, Charlie, who is the agent who did not make the cut in the original film, he confronts Eggsy, and then we go on a wild car chase, and we find out, oh, Charlie's got metal arms. He's a Terminator now. And Eggsy manages to fight him off in this car chase, and his arm hacks the car left there by Eggsy. Did not know the arm could be remote controlled. And as a result, all of the Kingsman targets are blown up very early in the movie, not spoiling anything. Very early in the morning. Very early in the movie, all the Kingsman targets. Roxy, JB, his poor dog, JB.
Oh, God.
Dumbledore, gone. All Kingsman targets destroyed, except for Merlin, except for Eggsy, which causes them to seek out a clue, and which leads them to the Statesman in Kentucky, where Colin Firth, his character Galahad, was shot in the head in the first one, and by Samuel Jackson, who, actually, by the way, did you see the first one, Nick?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I
love the first one.
The plot, the villain, Samuel Jackson's the villain in the first one. His plot to a much needed population downsizing. I can't say I disagree with that. I cannot say I'm 100% opposed to his plan at all.
Jesus, that's a
whole, different. Not the way he does it, but I do agree with. I agree with his end result. I don't agree with his methods. I'll say that.
Well, I mean, obviously, if you decrease the size of the population, you know, you're gonna decrease. You're gonna decrease a lot of things. You know, pollution.
Well, no, yeah, he was trying to save the Earth in a weird way.
Oh, yeah. Very, yeah, weird, exactly, way.
Not that I mind, but... We, yeah. Our travels take us to...
Go
ahead.
I actually forgot that Colin Firth's character got shot in the first one. But, yeah, it was a nice reminder.
Well, I normally wouldn't say something like that. But it's such a plot point that it needs to be talked about. I think he was shot in the first one and thought dead, and Eggsy and Merlin, thinking he's dead, come to Kentucky to find that he is alive but have amnesia. Apparently, when you're shot in the head, if you put a wrap around you and inject these medicine that only the Kingsmen have, it saves you, but sometimes has side effects of memory wipe or not memory wipe, but forgetting everything.
Amnesia,
correct.
And it's some case, super amnesia. Spy stuff.
Yeah, so, yeah, James Bond, move over. The Kingsmen have cooler devices than you will ever have. Jeez Louise. So our travels take us to Kentucky, where they meet up with Channing Tatum. Of course they have to fight him, and they do, and Channing wins. And we're taken to Jeff Bridges, who explains the situation to, again, very early in the movie, explains the situation to them. The Statesman is the American branch of the Kingsmen, acts just like them. And with Agent Whiskey, they set out to stop Poppy and her plan. Poppy is, Julianne Moore, my goodness, is the best Poppy ever. She is a wonderful villain.
Yeah, I don't
wonderful
think
villain.
It can get much more better than her. She was very evil, and, I mean, God, her character was very evil and weird and...
Menacing, because she...
Yeah, menacing is great. Yeah,
she would kill people, she would kill people and smile about it.
Yeah, oh, weird. God.
I know, weird, right? That's... So, Eggsy and the group have to, again, save the world. All the while dealing with relationship problems with Tildy and dealing with some stuff back home. So as I thought this movie was wonderful. I loved it. I'm trying to separate personal from the quality of the movie. Personally, I loved the movie. I haven't really ascertained in my head how I think the quality to be, but I personally love this movie. If you're a fan of the first Kingsman, or if you're a fan of spy films in general, there's no reason to not watch this movie.
Yeah,
See the first one first. That's also a pretty good movie.
Mm-hmm.
Matthew Vaughn's a very competent director. A lot of things are done right. Everyone's brought back into play. You know, even the dog, JB, and Mr. Pickles are brought back. Colin Firth is literally brought back. You know, all the players were... return, and I don't have a problem with that. I like familiarity in franchise. I like bringing back familiar faces because it helps you with where you are in the story. I didn't think the music was anything special. I tried to...
Yeah.
The person I saw it with was raving about the music, and I really tried to, because I had the advantage of being told before I sat down to it that the music is wonderful. I thought it was just... nothing stood out to me.
as far as the score. I wish I could remember what it was, but I know there was one part where it was just, oh, okay, hold on. So, you know, Mountain Mama, West John, Virginia.
John Denver?
Dude, John Denver, man. John freaking Denver. He's getting a lot of attention throughout this year.
I love when that song is sung.
Yes.
That's my favorite part of the entire movie. Because I was in the theater. I was the only I saw it in the theater. You know, deep in the heart of Indiana. So I when he started singing, when the song is being sung, the John Denver song, "Take Me Home, Mountain Road, to the place, West Virginia." I stood up and like sang. And everyone told me to sit down. Of course, I shouldn't have stood up. But like, I felt this pride that I should have definitely like shown that I'm from West Virginia.
Yes,
that was awesome. Pretty cool. I really enjoyed the John Denver song. Although I think the situation in which it comes up is entirely needless. It doesn't have to happen. But I don't want to ruin anything. But
yeah. Country Roads, classic.
classic John Denver. Channing Tatum's dance moves, his sick dance moves, are also in this movie. I didn't see Magic Mike or Magic Mike XXL recently. I can't remember, but I'm hoping they were very similar to his dance moves in the Magic Mike movies. I'm hoping that they were, because that would just be super cool if they were. Did you notice that they were, Nick? Are you a fan of Magic Mike or Magic Mike XXL?
No, I have not seen Magic Mike, either of them.
So you are unaware of Channing Tatum's sick dance moves. Well, besides Kingsman, Golden Circle, you have not seen his sick dance moves.
Not true.
I believe
Step Up, I've seen a little bit of that.
Oh, yeah, the Ann Fletcher movie. I forgot about that movie that started it all.
Yeah, Grayson.
Jeez, I forgot about that. I actually saw that
to the roots, bro.
I actually saw that day one in the theater where I went where I grew up. Jeez, Louise, I can't remember. I can't know why I forgot that, but I started it all. His sick dance moves. Anyway, Channing Tatum is victim of Poppy's drug ring. Her plan is to distribute all the drugs, all these drugs that have what was that? It was hashtag blue mark?
Blue vein or something like that.
Hashtag blue vein or blue mark or blue face or something. That her drugs give you are infecting people with this terrible way to die. And she was holding the American president at ransom. So that's kind of her idea, is to have a foolproof plan to get what she wants. And of course the Kingsmen and the Statesmen are set out to stop her, because they are, of course, for some reason, the only intelligence community in the world. Which is... And I mean, I do. When I say I love the Kingsman, this sequel, it's because this is exactly what I wanted from a Kingsman sequel.
I second that. I definitely agree with you. It's what you wanted, and a little more.
It's a lot more. It goes. I mean, granted that the jokes are kind of played out, but they're still funny. I mean, mm-hmm. especially the. Towards the end, I'm not going to ruin anything, but towards the end, the jokes about the dogs and who they won't hurt are pretty friggin' hilarious. That's hilarious. I can't get over how funny that was. When he gets infected, Elton John, he kind of is her prisoner, and then when There's a scene when she's explaining how the virus works, and then when she shows the antivirus administered to Elton John, he's cured, and she's doing this like commercial, and then he is yelling, What have you done to me, you effing bitch? Like, what? He's just yelling in the background at her through a glass door. And then the person standing in his little jail cell room, he starts yelling at that person, and you can tell that person has absolutely no idea what to do next. Now that Elton John is yelling at him.
You know he wants to leave the room, but he's probably a little starstruck.
Or he's under orders by Poppy to not leave the room no matter what happens. But I think that whole bit is hilarious. I think it might go a little too far by the end of the movie, but it's still funny. You're still laughing at it.
Yeah, exactly. It works. You know, it works throughout the movie.
It does work. There will definitely be another Kingsman movie, and I'm very happy about that because, I mean, it's just fun. These Kingsman movies are, like, Matthew Vaughn, even with Kick-Ass, he was making movies that people, they were fun to watch. Now, the second Kick-Ass movie may have not been as fun to watch, but the first one was, I thought, a lot of fun to watch. It was just different. It was had that Matthew Vaughn kind of, but so did Stardust, and so did Layer Cake, and so did all the other movies that he made. They had like, the Matthew Vaughn touch, which is what I mean, Kingsman is one of the perfect movies for him. And, I mean, the third one's already been announced, so and he's under his director cue, so I hope he directs that as well and doesn't pass it off like he did the second Kick-Ass movie.
Very true. I hope he stays on this, too.
Nick, if you had a choice to be a Kingsman or a Statesman, which organization would you rather be affiliated with?
Oh, man.
The Kingsmen are the best-dressed people in the world, and their umbrellas have more firepower than most real guns. But the Statesmen have all kinds of alcohol, and they have cool stuff to play with, too. So.
Yeah. Well, you know what?
And they have things.
You know me. You know me, Grayson.
You're going to go with Stars and Stripes, Statesman.
I'm a Stars and Stripes through and through. You know, I bleed red, white, and blue. I'm going to go with a Statesman, you know.
Statesman. Can't argue with that one. That's a good choice for you, Nick. Nick, Stars and Stripes. What do your friends call you? 50 Stars? How many bars?
50 Stars, 13 bars. Bars. You know it.
You would definitely be a Statesman. I think I would go with Kings. I think Kingsman suits my personality more. I like to wear better clothes. I like to look awesome. I've been known to carry an umbrella with me from time to time. So I think Kingsman is where I will be. But I'm very happy with where the second one went. And when I was watching it, if the theater had 300 seats, 250 of them were really full. So you can really understand how embarrassed I was when I stood up and sang John Denver. But I had to do it. I had to represent. But for the amount of people in that theater, there was so much laughing and talking and pointing at the screen, and I hadn't seen that in a very long time. You know, everyone enjoying in the theater, everyone enjoying the movie equally, and that what I thought was that's a major accomplishment. So that's pretty cool. I haven't seen that in a long time. Maybe because I go to smaller theaters and just don't go to bigger theaters with bigger auditoriums. But that was really cool of an experience for me. I hadn't seen that since I was probably a teenager. You know, people all laughing at the same joke, all pointing. All really, you know, all loving the same one-liners. That was really kind of an experience for me.
Yeah, it makes the movie a little more special too.
I think Kingsman is the movie of the week of the three movies. I think Kingsman is absolutely the movie. If you just want to go watch a movie and have fun, Stronger is probably a little better, but Kingsman is absolutely a lot more fun.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
And the Clark Hayes movies, the Clark Hayes list of movies you should probably watch and or be able to note this week. I had it narrowed down. On Thursday, I had 10 different candidates. by Saturday, I narrowed down to 5, and by this morning, I narrowed down to 3, and then I made my decision this afternoon. Munich won out of all the different, ranging from 1965 to 2017. Munich was my choice in 2005. Steven Spielberg. He directed Eric Bana, Jeffrey Rush, Daniel Craig, Ciarán Hinds, which is probably a lot of people know him as the Dumbledore's brother in the last Harry Potter movie. If you don't know who Ciarán Hinds is, and Matthew Kasovitz. 1972, the Summer Olympics, the group Black September, they massacred people. That's a well-known, well-documented. And what isn't as well-known is the events of Munich, a small group of people to avenge that killing or that massacre in 1972 to hunt down the Black September group. We always give reasons. Spielberg at his best. I think this is such a departure for him as far as what he usually does that this almost isn't a Spielberg movie to me. It's presented in a way that I could tell it's a Spielberg movie, but when I say presented, I mean the poster, the trailer, what he chooses to highlight in the trailer is definitely, it would definitely fall into that category, but it is very much different from what he usually does, from his normal genre.
Mm-hmm.
He uses, what I thought was interesting in this movie, he sets the tone with using lights and darks to really amplify what's going on in the story. And a lot of it's done, when you see Eric Bana's character, he's usually sitting in a darker room, but there's all kinds of light, so it's kind of like conflicted back and forth between, because his character goes back and forth between, well, is what he's doing right, or is he just, or is he just like the terrorists? You know, is he doing the same thing that they were doing? And then as it plays out, their group starts getting hunted down one by one, and it just becomes this, if they even made any kind of a difference. One of my favorite scenes is the phone conversation he has. He's sitting on his bed, and what he's been asked to do, what he has done and will do is on his mind. And he's talking to his family, his wife holding his child, and of course that's a Spielberg touch. That's the family connection that Spielberg loves. And it's, you know, he's pretty much telling them what they want to hear so they can feel better, but he knows that's not the truth. And that's what I love. That's one of my favorite scenes in the movie. There are several scenes I think really are exemplary, but that's my favorite scene in the movie. It's him talking to him withholding information, talking to his wife on purpose because of the severity of his situation he's figured out. But he doesn't quite want to give that away to her and have her worry. But that's kind of the opposite of Kingsman. It's not as lighthearted and fun. It's a serious, you know, it's a serious, it's a very heavy movie, as Kingsman is not. But I think one of Spielberg's best is Munich, 2005. You can tweet the show at @LoveCinemaPod. We are available on Apple iTunes, Google Play, on Podbean. You can even find us and download that way if you choose. You can reach the show at @LoveCinemaPod. You can send a tweet at @LoveCinemaPod. You can check out the Facebook. You can also tweet myself, Grayson Maxwell 1, or Nick, again, your Twitter.
And Morris 1776, you already know. Well, no.
Nick Morris is the newest statesman. He would definitely be a statesman.
Oh yeah.
And thank you very much for listening. I hope you enjoyed these movies, and I hope you will, if you have not enjoyed them, I hope you will enjoy them very soon. Thanks for listening.